Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on Public Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It is your place for free speech. So go to republicbroadcasting.org. I say it's a place. It's a place with people where we hang out. It's like a, it's not like a hookah bar, because those people who hang out there, I don't know what they're like. But anyway, it's a good place. So keep this going, publicbroadcasting.org. I just got a Skype message from Public Broadcasting. How cool is that? And send a donation in whatever currency you care to send it in. And then download the Kosher-tified app from nationalbugle.com. Today we have with us Paul Stevenson. Paul, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you, Patrick.
Well, it's good for you to be back on again. Of course, last Sunday I was on your show, your excellent show, which is the Sunday night show. Is it the last RBN show of the week or of the weekend?
Well, it's 9 p.m. Central Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, so it's getting up there. I think there's a couple of shows after mine.
Raybould's show is right after yours, right? The Incendiary Radio.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, we were talking before the show. There's no shortage of stuff going on. So I guess first let's get to all of this vaccine passport madness. And like I said, I think there's two things about the vaccine passports. One is the vaccine and the other is the passport. So with the vaccines, they can inject stuff into us, gene therapies or whatever, and we're not supposed to have a say in it. We're just supposed to trust them. What could possibly go wrong? And the other is the passport aspect, where they can just keep details. They can keep a file on us, and we have to show that file. We have to show a QR code on our phone or whatever it is in order to gain access. It's not a passport to go to another country. It's a passport to go to the grocery store. Did you ever think you would have to show a passport to go to the grocery store, Paul?
No, I didn't. It's a huge, huge step in the direction of total control for those who want to subjugate us. And they're obsessed with it. And as you say, there's two aspects to it, the vaccine and what that entails, and then the vaccine passport. But the vaccine passport, and we spoke about this on my show on Sunday, that's the ultimate goal. And they're using the vaccine in a public health issue for a variety of reasons, but that is probably the main one, to get everybody with that little app on their phone. And then if you don't play ball, then you will become a social pariah. So it's all about total control, and to snub out any dissenters. And that thing,
when In 1984, that year, that very year, I went to Bulgaria, which was behind the Iron Curtain, and I arrived at night on a train from Yugoslavia, and pretty much everything was closed, but there was a friendly taxi driver, and one of the guys I was on the train with, who either spoke English or French, I was able to communicate with him. He was a Serbian, but I guess Serbian and Bulgarian are close enough that they're mutually intelligible. And he told the taxi driver to change some money for me. So he changed some money for me and took me to a hotel. And I went in and got the room. Then the next day when I got up, I think I was paying for it when I got up. And the woman behind the counter in English was asking me for my foreign exchange receipt. I was trying to give her money. She said, "Well, let me see your foreign exchange receipt." And I pretended I couldn't understand her. And I think she didn't want to think that her English wasn't good enough to be understood. So she just said, "Give me money." And I gave her the money. And then I went, and what did I try to do next? I think I tried to get a train ticket so I could go. I was in Sofia, right? I wanted to go somewhere. I can't remember what it was. Again,
show me your foreign exchange receipt. Everywhere I went, they were saying, show me your foreign exchange receipt. Then I thought, well, you know, I want to get the hell out of here. This business about showing a foreign exchange receipt everywhere. So, but I don't speak Bulgarian, and I saw a Korean, and he was a North Korean, and I went up to him. He's an Oriental, and I asked him in Korean, "Where's the station?" I could do that, you know, "Yogun Odiemdika." And he didn't want to have anything to do with me. But when the militia saw two foreigners talking to each other, they wanted to know what was up. And they came by and they asked, he could speak Bulgarian, and they just let him go. Then they came to me and said, "Okay, show us your foreign exchange receipt." I didn't have one. So it was a problem. I wound up getting a train. I couldn't get a international ticket. They would only sell me a ticket to like the closest town to the Yugoslav border. And then I had to walk the rest of the way. And I got to the border, and the Yugoslav border guards look at my passport and say, "You only left last night. Why are you coming back so soon?" I said, "Oh, because Yugoslavia is such a nice place." And they laughed. They knew what was going on. Anyway, that was kind of a long story, but that's what we're headed towards. And it's a lot more nefarious than show me your foreign exchange receipt. They're going to do it for everything. That's the plan. Total compliance.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, and who knows what the next step is after that. But once they've got everybody with these vaccine passports, then they can just, you know, they have you over a barrel with whatever they, with the next diabolical step and you know, they've got planned. Because if you don't, well, no job for you. And, you know, this, honestly, even a year ago, this is how quickly this moved. A year ago, even Nancy Pelosi and Biden himself was saying that they, you know, they're on record saying that they weren't going to, and they couldn't. It's not something they could do, is to force people to take a vaccine and this type of thing. And but now it's like, well, okay, we're still not going to force you to take a vaccine, but we're just going to do, just make your life an absolute misery, get you sacked from your job, or cut off any welfare you might get, or, you know, anything half decent anyway. So yeah, we're not actually going to make you take the vaccine. We're just going to make you a social pariah. And that is what's going on. And that's very, very difficult, particularly if people have families, you know, to feed, to then prioritize and to resist that, and to say no, because people, you know, are left with a choice. So, you know, you're now in a position where you have to have the courage of your convictions, and you have to act on principle as opposed to pragmatism. But it's a horrible position to put people in if you've got mouths to feed. And but that's how they're doing it. And as I say, you don't know what the next step is, you know, into this diabolical hellhole that they have planned for us. But if they've got you over a barrel with this control mechanism, and they can just turn off the tap when they want to, you know?
Yeah, well, they can do that. You know, I'm remembering the Bulgaria trip. Actually, they never sold me a ticket. What happened is I just got on the train in Sofia without a ticket. And by the time the conductor came by, I was only a few miles from the border. He just kicked me off because I didn't have a foreign exchange receipt. But that's the whole idea. But we do have people pushing back, and and there's progress being made. But here's one thing, and I want to ask you. I mean, there's obviously a conscious effort to repress news of A, protests, people pushing back, and B, gains that have been made from the protests. So we know of a few things. We know that the Illinois governor, Pritzker, had to postpone the vaccine mandate deadline for these public employees because of the police strike. And we know Southwest Airlines, I mean, there was a lot of contradictory news coming out, but we know Southwest Airlines backed down on that, the vaccine mandate. I've talked about LSU, which is a big football school, and they gave up on trying to enforce, I think, either vaccines or masks at their games because of non-compliance. And so what I want to ask you about is what are you here? Because I think there was a giant protest in Paris over the weekend. What are you hearing that we might not hear about because of all the repression of news?
Well, they've been suppressing riots in Paris for even before COVID. They had the yellow vest marches over there and stuff. But yeah, there's big marches over there. We have an, you know, there are ongoing marches over here as well. They happen regularly. If fact, there was one, I think, at the weekend or the weekend before that. You know, it's ongoing, and over in the United States, I think there's, you know, even in mainstream media, like people like Fox and things like that are reporting that, you know, you're having all these thousands of first responders nationwide who are taking a stand against this and maybe forced out of their jobs because of the vaccines and the vaccine mandates. And then you even had, I mean, this is where it's gone to now, where you get into where I was saying off air, that when this sort of stuff starts happening, where you have, you know, doctors and first responders and, you know, and all these types of people, law and order people that are stepping down when you've already got a huge increase in spike in crime and a breakdown of law and order. You've got these supply chain problems because they're forcing a lot of people. That's part of it anyway, where they're forcing people into taking these vaccines and people don't want to. And then you're having these, you know, these jobs that just aren't being done. So you're going to have, it depends how serious it gets, but it's not looking good where you're having these societal breakdowns, just the society ceasing to function as it normally does. And that little scumbag in Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, there was a judge who issued a restraining order, which was to stop a Chicago police union boss from talking against the vaccine mandates. And the judge on Friday issued a temporary restraining order against that Chicago police union president. You know, this is how heavy-handed it's getting. You know, and that basically stopped him from making public statements that encourage members not to report their COVID-19 vaccine status to the city. I mean, this is getting really just crazy stuff, you know. So,
judges they're not supposed to be able to just decree anything they want. It's, there should be some sort of basis in the Constitution or in law or in precedent. And what could there possibly be to put a restraining order against somebody so that he can't talk about a matter of public interest like this?
They stopped him from making public statements, so no public statements to be made that are encouraging your members not to report their COVID-19 vaccine status. So, in other words, you know, no freedom for you guys, and I'm not allowed to even talk about it. So, do what you're told.
I guess, I mean, we've seen some stuff like that. Roger Stone, who's no hero, but he's he was one of Trump's advisors. And he was in some sort of legal trouble, and there was a restraining order on him. He had been slandered somehow, and he wasn't able to. He was ordered by a judge not to talk about it. And so, it's just getting so heavy-handed. And I think last night, I wound up quoting the founder of the North Korean state and the founder of the dynasty, Kim Il Sung, who's Kim Jong Un's grandfather, who was the creator of the wonderful Juche idea of self-reliance. But he said that people are the masters of their own destiny. Well, I don't know if he's the first person who said it, but that North Koreans all think that was a great idea. And I certainly hope we're the masters of our own destiny, but things have gone very, very far when we start looking to the founder of a communist dictatorship for inspiration, or at least I think so. Maybe nobody else is looking to him for inspiration, but we've gone really, really far.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, we are, you know, and the type of language and the type of warfare and the type of, you know, state propaganda is so Soviet-like at this stage. This is like, you know, even the stuff with inflation and that whole narrative, and you know, it's really like straight out of the Politburo. You know, they in the Soviet Union, of course, when the shelves were really empty, they used to say to the poor Russians, "Well, you know, sometimes if they happen to get access to see these pictures in America, where all the shelves are really full, and they've got all these, you know, stores which are vibrant and bursting at the seams, and then you know, the poor Russians were queuing up all day for, you know, a bread line or whatever to get some, or a bowl of soup, and the shelves were empty." The Politburo put out a statement saying, "Oh no, don't be fooled. That's American propaganda. And the reason that the shelves are full is because they've got no money. You're lucky. The stuff's flying off the shelves." It's like, you know, that's the problem. You know, the shelves are empty because you're so, you know, everything's so wonderful and you've got all this money and it's just flying off the shelves. Those poor Americans, they can't afford to buy anything. That's why the shelves are full.
Well, you know, at least they could say that. It wasn't true, but at least they could say. I mean, they famously would have these five-year plans and come out with these goals. And, of course, the five-year plans were disasters because they have all these numerical targets. And then in the rush to meet the numerical targets, the factory managers, quality meant nothing in the plan. So they just put out all this shoddy stuff that didn't work. The American system or the capitalist, the market system, is supposed to respond to shortages with higher prices. And the planned economy, the Soviet-style economy, where the prices were fixed, you would have lines, right? And shortages,
central economic, government planning, basically.
And so they could say that, but of course, you know, the thing is, there were these supply chain issues, and part of the supply chain issues would be that maybe you're trying to make a car, but the spark plug factory, in order to meet its goal in the 5-year plan, just put out stuff that didn't work, and then there's no working spark plugs for the cars, and so then there's no cars. And I traveled through the Soviet Union, and you'd look out the window of your train, and you'd go past these factories, and in the yards of the factories, you just see a whole bunch of like rusting transformers that must have been built in either, you know, supply chain issue or quality issue or whatever. They're just out there rusting. You just saw a ton, just when I say tons, I mean tons and tons of rusting stuff. But now we've got that here, and we don't have the excuse of the 5-year plan. I mean, part of it is obviously because they're putting people out of work. What else is going on with these supply chain issues, with these empty shelves?
What is going on with that? Yeah, so you've got all – part of it is the worker situation. And part of it, I think, is also just the sheer scale of it, because if you think about it, and this is another thing which accelerated from the COVID thing. People are buying almost everything online. It's kind of human nature. I do it myself. You know, when you're sort of forced into a situation where you can't do something, you get into a habit of doing an alternative. And I think that's by design as well. You know, Jeff Bezos is, you know, his profits have gone through the roof. Because what happens is you end up ordering every little thing. I know there's stuff that I could order. I could pop up to even the local store sometimes, and I'm looking on Amazon, you know. So you're having these little things, and those little things have to be put in a box somewhere, and they have to be loaded on a truck. It might even be just like, you know, just think about it. If you even just like little things, you know, you might just say, you know what, I'm going to get my dishwasher tablets or my washing up liquid and my bleach on Amazon, because I can't be bothered going up to Tesco, I'm busy or whatever. And then that has to be picked in a warehouse somewhere, and that has to be put in a box, and it has to be separate. And that's part of what's going on too. There's too much stuff circulating in that way, whereas normally people will go and get their own things. And then, of course, as I say, you've got workers who are not prepared to work because of the vaccine. Apart from that, I need to look into it. I've been looking into it a little bit more the last couple of days, but I haven't got anything, you know, outstanding, I don't think, to say on it. I would need to like look into it more. I was listening to some guys I listened to yesterday on it, and it's making a bit more sense to me. But I think it's largely just a failure of what happens when you allow governments to, you know, to this sort of central, you know, government central planning. They make a mess of everything, and then you can argue, is it deliberate? Because that's another angle. The Federal Reserve have been blaming inflation on these bottleneck supply chain problems, and they've been able to sort of, you know, say it's transitory, and these delays are a result of COVID, and everyone's coming back, and then it's all spin and propaganda, and say this is a sign of the bursting, the explosion of the economy coming back into life, and we're not quite up to speed with it yet, you know, this type of stuff. You know?
Yeah, they've been saying stuff like that. Now, we're right up at the break, but we'll be right back.
Well, in the merry month of May, now from me home I started, left the girls and two were nearly broken hearted, saluted father dear, kissed me darling mother.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast two-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
I could no longer stand it, blood began to boil. Templar I was, there was impure old Aaron's oil. They began abusing her, Rami, so well, says I, Michelle, I let fly. Galway boys were by, and so I was a howling wind below, hooray, the giant in the affray. Quickly clear the way for the rocky road, it's a double and one, two, three, four, five. Hunt the hare and turn her down the rocky road, and all the ways to
do. We are back, and so the, we're hearing all sorts of weird stuff going on. Really, I mean, it's gotten to 1984 levels of what did they say, lies are truth and war is peace and all of this, and it's funny to see Jen Psaki get up there every day and put a spin on things that, well, there aren't things on the shelf, you know, goods aren't on the shelves, there are shortages. Well, that's because the economy is so strong and everybody's buying everything, so you're getting a whole bunch of that. Pete Buttigieg, who was Mayor Pete, he's the transportation secretary. He had run for president, and apparently he's been on paternity leave because he and the dude he gay married adopted a kid, or two kids, I guess. And so he gets 2 months off of his job for that, which is like, really? And he was on TV saying that, there's not enough, you know, we're the economy is so hot that that's why there are these ships that are backed up in Los Angeles Harbor, because there's just, we're buying everything's going so well, and they just can't deliver the stuff fast enough. Is war and peace, right?
Yeah, I mean, and the sad thing is, this actually works, you know, on some people. Well, it works on a lot of people. A lot of people are very naive, and if it's coming out of CNN or if it's coming out of BBC or whatever else, a lot of people fall for this nonsense. If some of these clowns, these talking heads on these news broadcasters on CNN or BBC came out and said, oh, you know, there's new flying pigs that can fire weapons. We've got these intelligent flying pigs that are going to be, you know, the next big thing, you know, in warfare. And they're controlled by cats that sit on top of them, and it's going to save a lot of lives. There would be people go, oh, that's cool. That makes sense. Yeah, good, you know. I mean, it's so far out. It's so crazy. The lies are just so kind of, you know, extreme and almost comical. And yet there are people that are like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, no, of course, yeah, that would make sense, wouldn't it? Yeah, because if we had, you know, all the stuff flying off the shelves because we're so wealthy, yeah, that makes sense. You know, we just got to get stuff in more quickly because our thriving economy is too much for the rest of the world. The rest of the world can't keep up with us, you know. It's like, it's childish. It's almost comical, but of course it's so serious. But these ships, I've seen pictures of them, these massive big ships, you know, they're just harbored outside, you know, harbors and just, you're just stuck there in California. So whatever the reason, there's serious logistical problems getting that stuff off those big containers and into lorries and everything else, you know. I suspect that, you know, these vaccine mandates have a lot to do with it because they can't be getting the drivers. We had a similar problem over here with the fuel, that we had a massive shortage of, you know, HGV drivers.
Right, and so solution that, what was it, Boris Johnson or whoever was in charge proposed was issue, 40,000 visas to foreigners, bring in foreign drivers? Oh, and it was supposedly because of Brexit?
Yeah, exactly. It's a wonder they didn't say, you know, Somalia and, you know, Ethiopia are apparently the world's leading HGV drivers. So I think we're going to have to issue 200,000 visas to, you know, Somalians and Eritreans or whatever, because it's painful to watch because they, you know, it's like these people just, you know, they almost just mock you with their lies, and you can just see them laughing at you, you know.
Well, speaking of mocking us, so this was something. You know, when we mentioned Mayor Pete and his the dude he gay married earlier, the Department of State, as if they have nothing better to do, on their Twitter site, they had a tweet. Today, on International Pronouns Day, we share why many people list their pronouns on their email and social media profiles. Read more here on, you know, and then they give some sort of website. And there's a picture here. And, you know, they've got six figures that are drawn. These are like, you know, cartoon kind of figures, but they all have skin tones and they all have hairstyles and whatnot. And you've got a pinkish woman. So I guess she's supposed to be Caucasian. She got white hair. She's wearing a dress. She/her. Then next to him is a dude with a beard and a turban. Like, I mean, we really don't have a lot of Sikhs in America, but, you know, it's the State Department. And he/him. So the turban guy. The Sikh can be straight. Next thing you know, you've got like a female with like a short white afro, and that's they them. Now you've got, you know, you've got like a brownish female with a big bun on her head, which is a popular hairstyle for the blacks, and that's a he/him. Then you've got a black woman with a giant afro, they them. And then you've got a dude who's either white or oriental, because they don't really show the eyes, and that's she, her. I mean, they're totally mocking us. So with this whole pronouns thing, you know, if it was 20 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago, International Pronouns Day, I would have thought, oh, that's great. I mean, they're getting into linguistics, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad we're up. I'm glad we're going into more detail in the curriculum these days, because the kids are, you know, the schools are crazy.
But we're at the break. We'll be right back.
Well, I'm a little bigger man, I'm bigger than a teen. If you teach Dora more, I'm a little lily green, and I know I'm from the leafy from the basement to the zoo, and I know.
Huh.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Extendivite 7-Herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store, or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
I got the sky, I got the road, I got the sky, the world is my home, I got the sky, I got the road, I got the sky, the world is my home, I got the sky.
So we are back, and things haven't always been like this. And there was a period of time where you didn't have all of these woke billionaires who were the opinion leaders on issues of weirdness. You didn't have, you probably did have George Soros type characters. You probably had a lot of Rothschilds. But you also did have at least one tycoon who was dropping the red pills on people. Who was that?
Henry Ford.
Henry Ford. Do we have a quote for the day?
Oh, well, let me give a bit of background, and then I'll give you, it's a bit of a slightly long quote, but I think it's worth hearing. This pertains to the delegates at the first meeting of the 1906 Jewish Society's Religious, Political, Industrial, and Communal. Okay, so the Jews are getting together, getting organized very early on here after they had...
Jews getting organized, come on, that's an oxymoron.
I know, it's so out of character. But anyway, they were saying, they were trying to get together and see if they could pull off their little antics that they had done everywhere else in Europe, and eventually got expelled soon enough when it became so intolerable. I think it might be getting to that stage soon. They did not expect the American people would stand for it. They thought the American people would immediately understand what was afoot and oppose it. And then Ford goes on, But the American people made no protest. They have taken power in America by audacity, and they have taken it in such a way as to make resentment of it seem like an anti-Semitic movement, and that is why they have held it as long as they have. And now here it goes on. This is the part, you know. That's all very interesting too, but when you just look at it like this, it says, as to the Kahila was kind of, you know what the Kahila was?
No.
Okay, well, the Kahila was like, they're kind of like, it's kind of like a Jewish sort of ghetto almost, you know, where they did all their little, you know, organizing. And it was basically a power center of Jewish power and getting their little minds, scheming minds together, you know, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And I said, as to the Kahila being officially representative, it may be added that the Kahila has its representatives of the Central Conference of American Rabbis, Eastern Council of Reform Rabbis, Independent Order of B'nai B'rith, Independent Order of B'rith Shalom, Independent Order of Free Sons of Israel, Independent Order of B'rith Abraham, Federation of American Zionists, Orthodox Jews, Reformed Jews, apostate Jews, rich Jews, poor Jews, law-abiding Jews, and revolutionary Jews. At the 1918 convention, there were present Jacob Schiff, banker, who funded the Bolshevik Revolution, Louis Marshall, lawyer, president of the American Jewish Committee, Adolf S. Ox, proprietor of the New York Times, Otto A. Rosalski, judge of the Central Session Court, Otto H. Kahn of the banking house of Kuhn Loben Company, which was basically Paul Warburg. Kuhn Loben Company was who Paul Warburg worked for, who was the architect of the Federal Reserve Act, which was clandestinely brought in there and was the beginning of the end. Mm-hmm. And this thing just goes on and on and on of just, you name it, of just every little Jew getting together, rich, poor, you name it. Benjamin Schlesinger, who had lately returned from Moscow, where he had a conference with Lenin. Joseph Schlossberg, General Secretary of the Amalgamated Clothing Workers of America. Max Pine, also a recent consultant with the Bolshevik rulers of Russia. David Pinsky, Joseph Barondess. I mean, it just goes on and on. You know, this is where it all began, you know, and that was the beginning of the end for America. But I think the most depressing side of it is there were even Jews who thought, nah, they, we're not going to get away with this. But the Americans made no protest. And then it says.
Well, I mean, I was just going to say, this is basically about 100 years ago that Ford's complaining about this. And
yeah,
this is always the thing. When did this all start? It's been insidious. But to think that 100 years ago, you already had this degree of alarm from somebody as prominent as Henry Ford. And of course, 20 years later, 80 years ago, you had similar alarms being raised by Lindbergh, the aviator, Charles Lindbergh. Was Charles Lindbergh the aviator, or was that his father?
Charles Lindbergh and the other big guy.
Yeah.
And also Joe Kennedy was dead against the First World War, and he knew what these people were up to as well.
And of course, I mean, you can go back further, but you know, you can go back into the 1800s in America, and Ulysses S. Grant, the general, the Union general, forbade Jews from occupied territory in the Confederacy because they were coming down, yeah. And you know, they're with their trading, with their, I guess, riling up the slaves or whatever they were doing, but they were forbidden from. But you know, at that time, the fact that that Grant forbade Jews from the occupied territories, it meant two things. One is that they were troublesome, and two, that they weren't in control yet, and they could be forbidden from in that way, right? So they obviously weren't in control, but they were already viewed as troublesome. And then, of course, you know, towards the end of the century, in 1918, well, I guess not 1918, I was thinking of the Spanish-American War, maybe that was more William Randolph Hearst, but, you know, William Randolph Hearst and Joseph Pulitzer were the two big rival newspaper publishers in New York. And, you know, so Pulitz already had a great deal of power. And, you know, Tin Pan Alley, which was music publishing, but before they had records, before you had music recording, music publishing was a big deal. So they were big in that. They were big in retail. They were big in garments.
Music as well.
In what?
They pushed jazz music as well.
Which you can do worse than jazz music, but I guess jazz music was Negro culture, right?
Yeah, and it's, you know, and also, I mean, musically, it's simple. It's quite simple in a way. And to my mind, you know, because we're so far removed from it, you know, we sort of look back on it in a fonder light, I believe. But to my mind, it's the equivalent of some of the rap music today. You know, maybe in 100 years' time, some people will look back and say, oh, you know, rap music was, you know, that was good, whatever. But at the time, jazz music had a very detrimental effect on the morality of the time. You had women in short skirts, you know, out drinking and partying and smoking and doing things which were otherwise considered undignified in a Christian society. So that was one thing. I mean, I'm not necessarily attacking the music per se, but it was, you know, that was another thing that they pushed very much, you know. And as you say, the black aspect of it was this kind of like, oh, look, the black people are bringing all this great music and people are having a lot of fun, you know. It was an attack on Christianity and the Christian culture, you know.
Well, so, yeah, and some of the songs, when you look back at them, because I do like these songs, and compared to today, they're very tame. But, you know, I think of, say, Making Whoopee, Another Bride, Another... I mean, even here, they're talking about marriage, but Another Bride, Another June, Another Sunny Honeymoon, Another Season, Another Reason for Making Whoopee. Well, what is Making Whoopee? Well, I mean, later on in the song, there's a baby, and then there's a divorce, and you're... he doesn't have money, only 5,000 per, meaning 5,000 per year. Some judge who thinks he's funny says, you'll pay six to her. He says, now, judge, suppose I fail. The judge says, budge right into jail. You'd better keep her. I think it's cheaper than making whoopee. So, I mean, it was like references to having sex, and maybe he had sex out of wedlock or whatever. But, you know, you find that. And I'm sure that was very racy back in, 1905 or whenever it was published.
Yeah, and it's utilizing a certain sort of comedy and that sort of lightheartedness, which we spoke about before, that Jews do with comedy, you know, like Father Ted. I mean, it's, these things are, it's hard not to laugh, but there's a serious aspect to these things. They are subversive. I'll just give you one other quick quote. It says, this throws a very strong light on all the revolutionary programs to break up the present control of society by sowing dissension between so-called capital and labor, by cheapening the dignity of government through corrupt politics, by trivializing, this is what we're talking about here, by trivializing the mind of the people through theaters and music and movies. But it is in the study of Jewish money-making out of war that the clues are found to most of the great abuses of which the Jews have been guilty. But it sort of outlines some of their little scheming tricks that, unless you've got the discernment and the knowledge, you know, you just think these things are harmless. And if you mention them, everyone would call you a spoil sport and stuffy. But, you know, it's like if you had a time machine at the time, you say, okay, before you call me stuffy, let's just go forward a century, and then you can throw up and have a fit and think you've arrived in hell, and then I'll take you back and we'll have that discussion again, you know.
Yeah, you know, when you think of the way Jews as a group conduct themselves, there's this kind of full court press that they do. You know, other countries, if you're talking, let's just say for American foreign aid, other countries would, their ambassadors would come to Washington from wherever, from Nigeria, from Chad, from Pakistan, and they would ask for a foreign aid grant, and they'd get one, and they'd be happy, and they'd go home. But Israel, it's like, okay, they get the foreign aid grant, and then they said, okay, well, but we want it up front so we can put it in the bank and earn interest. Oh, okay. Oh, and we also want loan guarantees. Oh, okay. And we also want you to sell us surplus weapons. Well, what if we don't have surplus weapons? Oh, you will have surplus weapons because you'll have a dual citizen as a comptroller of the Pentagon. There will be surplus weapons. And like they just put everything. And then when you look at the Jewish power structure, because the thing is, you know, we can complain. Like I will complain about, for instance, all of the blacks they put in advertisement. And people say, what's the big, oh, let the blacks have their let them be in advertisement. We were in advertisement for 100 years. Let them be. But the thing is, they're pushing every single thing. Every time they've got an advantage to push, they push that advantage. And it is this full court press. And some of the things seem so minor and so petty, but, you know, there's the concept of death by 1,000 paper cuts. How many paper cuts do we have?
Yeah, they're just relentless.
Relentless scheming.
Relentless scheming, and very aggressively so. It's machine-like. And, you know, it's hard not to think that there's some sort of, you know, biology going on. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily, you know, it's required to have that sort of evolutionary biological model to explain it. I could probably understand it in a more spiritual type Christian sinful way as well, but it's incredibly machine-like. It's what's the word I'm looking for? It's like an organism that just, you know, it's just what it does. If you know, it's like those little, it's like, you know, remember the Spider-Man movie when he got in trouble with that the black sort of organism that got control over his suit, and it just grew and grew and overtook him, and he became darker, more controlled by this thing all the time, and he just couldn't extract himself from this thing with like tremendous willpower, because this thing just spread. It just spread everywhere, climbed up walls, and it just, you know, and that's just what it did. You know, it's fascinating in a way, if it wasn't for the fact that it brings so much misery, you know.
Yeah, it's always been my feeling that there is one of the things about Jews is there's a lot of cohesion. And, you know, on the one hand, like on the surface, they seem to be sometimes kind of argumentative. And, you know, people say, Jews themselves will say, oh, you stick five Jews in a room and you get six opinions. Right. But the fact is there's an awful lot of cohesion on a lot. And, you know, one thing is there is a priority put on the group interest, on what's good for the Jews. And while they might not agree on exactly what's good for the Jews, it is a priority. They might argue about what's good for the Jews, but they want what's good for the Jews, much in a way that white people certainly don't. I mean, how many, even look at it like the billionaires, whether it's the Goy billionaires. So you've got Elon Musk, who I guess now is the richest, and then Jeff Bezos was the richest, and then before him, I guess it was Bill Gates. He's the richest people, and you know they've got they might have their agendas, and Bill Gates seems to be a very nefarious agenda, but it's not an ethnic agenda. In what way do I mean? Even the much maligned Koch brothers, they never had an ethnic agenda; they had a business agenda. But I mean, can you see any white billionaire, non-Jewish white billionaire, that's got an ethnic agenda?
Or could you see any white billionaire who would give me a job, and you know, because I'm a white guy, and say, you know, don't worry, you know, I'll look after you. You know, I've seen this a little bit with, you know, with the Irish, this type of thing. The Irish are they're not on the same scale as the Jews, but you know, when Irish people go abroad, there is a certain amount of awareness. Oh, another Irish guy, you know, let's look after him a little bit. You know, I've seen that in action.
I think that happened in and by the way, I mean Ford was 100 years ago. Ford did seem to have an ethnic thing, but that's why he's remarkable now, because I mean it would never happen now. But yeah, I think the Irish in America when they came over in the 1840s and later in the century, there was a lot of cohesion, and they were kind of a problem. And these are my ancestors, but I always say that my English American ancestors had every right to be alarmed at the arrival of my Irish American ancestors.
Yeah, they are they're nowhere near as nefarious, or they don't have that cohesion to the extent that the Jews do. But you know, I remember, you know, even when I moved to London, some Irish guys, you know, noticing it. I didn't really feel part of that. Maybe it's because I was from Northern Ireland, which is a different kind of ball game. But I very much noticed it in my brother's life in San Francisco. And, you know, they were very keen on business. They'd open up one pub, and then it'd be another pub, and then it'd be another pub. And you know, they would take advantage of the whole sort of Irish charm crack thing. You know, I remember getting to the bar, and it's just like, you know, I got to the bar, and these little slogans, Cade Mealyfield, and, you know, and it's like, oh, the Irish are great crack, and we love our music and everything else. And I go, give us a pint of Guinness, mate, please, will you? Oh, you're an Irishman, are you? Oh, it's good to see you, mate. Good to see you. Where are you from? Oh, I'm Niall's brother. Oh, you're Niall's brother. Oh, great. Yeah, just a pint of Guinness there, mate. No problem. That'll be $12.
Hello. Oh, well.
Very friendly Irish bar here, but you're not, you're not shy to charge for a pint.
That's like a break, yeah. Okay, well, speaking of breaks, we're up on the break, and we'll be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
For over 20 years now, Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations and NSVT down drastically. This isn't a cure-all supplement. I strongly recommend a good diet and exercise to aid in any heart troubles you may be having, and I strongly recommend giving Extendivite a try. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Okay, we are back, and you know, in Japan, they are saying, "Hey, we hardly have any new cases. Let's just ease off." They never had the lockdowns, but they still had some restrictions. But I have the feeling maybe they're just being a little bit autistic and haven't gotten the memo. Are they going to be easing up in Britain anytime soon?
Unfortunately not, Patrick. The predictable rhetoric is coming out already. This is an article in the BBC. Some COVID restrictions must immediately be reintroduced if England is to avoid, quote, stumbling into a winter crisis, health leaders have warned. The NHS Confederation said a backup strategy or plan B, which includes mandatory face coverings in crowded and enclosed spaces, should be implemented. By the way, another one on that list of things that should be implemented is you get vaccine passports. But it's okay, because Kwasi Kwarteng, nice black fella here who arrived here in the 70s, I think, quote, I don't want to reverse to a situation where we have lockdowns. So he gets to decide, Patrick, whether we have lockdowns or not.
What's his role? What is his position in the government?
I think he's actually a vaccine minister, I think he is. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know. You've actually, you know, they're planning these things sticking around. You know, you've got education ministers, you've got transport ministers, and now we've got a vaccine minister. So this is where we're headed, and this is back to what we were talking about again. You know, it says COVID-19 winter plan for England. The plan B, contingency measures triggered under the NHS on unsustainable pressure, will include face coverings compulsory in some settings, powers to introduce vaccine passports. And then the rest of them are just irrelevant, because you may as well just put an X around them and highlight the powers to introduce vaccine passports, because that's what it's all about. The rest of them are just these sort of almost encourage people to work from home, communicating the need for caution. Well, they're kind of, you know, seem reasonable and fairly innocuous, but it's that powers to introduce vaccine passports that's just sandwiched in between those other less tyrannical measures. Face coverings compulsory in some settings. I think this is back to what we were saying, coming full circle. They took their foot off the gas to give everybody a breather, I think, and now they're going to go for another push on these vaccine passports.
And will they get away with it?
I don't think they will. I actually don't. I think they have learned nothing, because they, you know, the sort of collateral damage which is done from COVID in the last 18 months, people have digested it, they've processed it, it's evident now, we can see it. There's all sorts of problems. There's inflation, there's backlogs of cancer treatments, you've had people, you know, doing these protests, you've had a severe problem with law and order, and they think they're just going to come in. I don't think they are, Patrick. I just think we're going to go through a really, really tremendous state of chaos, because a lot of people are just going to draw the line at that and say, no, shove your job, or shove whatever, you know, the pennies drop, the people have got the email of what's going on, and they're going to say no. And I think, you know, it doesn't take that many people, I think, to say no and to have some sort of testicular fortitude around it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, when they come out with things like unvaccinated people killed Colin Powell. Really? I mean, especially somebody who's unvaccinated, who's had the disease and has the antibodies, how did he kill Colin Powell? Somebody who's unvaccinated and has never had the disease, and obviously you've never spread it to anybody, how has that person killed Colin Powell? And really, I mean, Colin Powell, 84 years old, I don't want to besmirch the memory of dead people, but I'd just rather not remember him, I guess. Anyway, we're up at the end of the show, but thank you very much for joining me, Paul.
It's always a real pleasure, Patrick, speaking to you. Thank you very much for having me on.
Okay, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.